The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There's never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Have you ever wanted to talk to an actual archaeologist? Because I don't. But actually, that's not true. I know. If you know me, you know I love archaeology. I love biblical archaeology. In my new book, Is Atheism Dead? A third of the book is devoted to biblical archaeology. It's really exciting when you know the details, when you know the stories. It's just undeniably exciting. So you can imagine, I was pretty excited when I learned that Dr. Steve Notley could come into the studio. Why? You're saying, why, Eric? Because he's an archaeologist. He's a distinguished professor of New Testament and Christian origins at Nyack College, and he is at the center of a very, very, very exciting New Testament dig. Dr. Steve Notley, welcome.
Thank you for having me here.
You can tell I'm bursting with country fresh flavor over this issue. I just can't. Where do we start? Just tell my audience the nutshell version of what you are privileged to be working on right now.
I like to describe the site as the last lost city of the Gospels. Most people don't realize they go to Israel, they visit there, they get off the bus, there's a sign telling them they're at Caesarea or Megiddo. They don't realize that almost all of these biblical sites got lost. They were destroyed, abandoned, forgotten, and we've been in a process for the last 150 years of rediscovery.
Okay, so when you say got lost, you're saying over 2,000 years, we lost track. So in the last 200 years, roughly,
right,
we have been finding the places we've read about. We've been showing that they exist, that they're true. But you're telling me that the one that you're working on now is the last one. This is the one that we did not know where it was until recently.
Exactly. There was an alternate site suggested about a mile and a half from where we are. They've been digging there since 1987, but it had problems, and there were a lot of hesitations. People weren't willing to sign off on it being Bethsaida, which is an important site. Apart from Capernaum in the Galilee, it's the second most mentioned site in the Gospels.
Okay, so when you say Bethsaida, for people just kind of tuning in, why is that important? What happened there, according to the Gospels, that we would know about?
It's the home of Peter, Andrew, and Philip. So Jesus' apostles are coming from there. It's also in the region of Bethsaida where the feeding of the 5,000 takes place. You also have various healings taking place there, Jesus' ministry of healing. Whenever he gets into the boat to go to the other side, that is Bethsaida. That is
okay,
the trans
Jordan. So you're telling me until 5 minutes ago, we did not know where it was.
Not until we started excavating.
And now we know.
Yes.
And we're excited.
You should be.
This
yes.
is a big deal.
It is a
now,
huge deal.
I thought Peter was from Capernaum.
No.
But didn't they have a home? What's in Capernaum? Anyway, we'll talk about that another time. But so you're telling me that until this dig, which you're leading, we didn't know.
Nope.
When did you know and how did you... As I have looked into this world of biblical archaeology, I've found it interesting that people sometimes settle on identifying something. They're not sure, but they kind of settle on it because it's the best bet. And years pass, and then later they realize, no, it's over here. That's basically what happened with Bethsaida.
Exactly. There's oftentimes there's various disciplines that are used to try to identify a site. Archaeology is usually the last word, let's say. It comes in and confirms whether there are material remains that match the historical descriptions.
Right.
And sometimes we find that places that were previously thought to be a particular location are not. And that's what happened in this occasion. And there were questions being raised. There were various suggestions already in the 19th century as to where it might be. And one of the sites, as I mentioned, an Israeli archaeologist was excavating there. But it's about a mile and a half from the lake shore. And one of the things we know about Bethsaida is that it is a fishing village. And you don't build a fishing village a mile and a half from the lake shore.
So what happened?
They began digging there, and they dug for 30 years. And again, there were questions raised about it. Various people mm-hmm. raised questions. I published in 2007, sort of in a peer-reviewed journal, challenging that site, and
okay.
it started a huge conversation. And basically, we were challenged if we thought it was someplace else, we should excavate it.
See, I love the way this works. And again, it's only because I wrote my recent book that I've started to understand how this works. Because a big part of my book, I talk about the discovery of biblical Sodom, Dr. Stephen Collins, Albuquerque, and it's the same thing where, you know, eminent biblical archaeologists had sort of settled on a couple of other sites. And when you looked into it, you said, well, they've got those sites have some real problems. So if you were an archaeologist, you'd say, gosh, I wonder if we could ever find the real thing. And that's kind of what happened with you, right? I mean, you said that this place, yeah, it could be it, but if it's a fishing village, I mean, anybody who's walked a mile and a half recently understands you don't build a fishing village 30 minutes away by foot, on foot.
As I grew up in Oklahoma, and we would say that's a long way to pull your boat.
Hey, that's good. That's good. Yeah. But it's true. So you had this gut feeling. Now, I'm sure people would have said maybe the Sea of Galilee was bigger or something. Was that ever an option?
They tried to come up with alternatives. They claimed that the lake was 20 feet higher, which brought them closer. The problem with that is that if it's that high, it inundates every known settlement, Capernaum, Tiberias, Magdala, everything is underwater. So in other words, to solve their problem, they create a whole boatload of other problems.
Okay. All right, so let's just settle on it, folks. Bethsaida has been discovered. What are some of the things that you discovered there that make you realize this is, in fact, the New Testament Bethsaida?
First of all, I'm trained as an historian. That's what I do. Reading ancient texts, and particularly historical geography, how does the contours of land match it? So we have ancient descriptions of where Josephus, the Jewish historian, actually tells us, describes precisely where it was located. And so that's why when we began to think about excavating, we went by the ancient descriptions. Being on the lake shore, as I mentioned, that's where you would have a fishing village, and near to the Jordan River. We're about 200 yards from the Jordan River, which is exactly as Josephus describes it, at least from.
I wonder, though, why would anybody have ever doubted Josephus at all? I mean, if Josephus, who is such an eminent figure, such an authoritative figure, put it this way, why would anybody else go with something else? Like, he never just made stuff up.
Not everybody takes sufficient attention to historical sources. That's one of the problems. When you approach a question like this, it requires multiple disciplines, not a single one. Everyone gets in their lane, stays in their lane, whether it's archaeology or history, and they don't get out of their lane.
I have noticed this. This is what's so fascinating is that all these big, fascinating puzzles tend to be solved by people who have the guts to step back and look at several disciplines at once. Because when you just look at – because there's some people that almost make an idol of their discipline.
Exactly.
And they say, it's only about archaeology. It's only about stones. And other people are like, no, it's only about – and you realize it's going to be all these things usually.
Exactly. It's a multidisciplinary approach. And when you do that, when you get out of your lane and you start having the information, if I can say it like this, bump up against each other.
Yeah.
And creating a friction, you start, you're saying, oh, I have to look at it in a slightly different way. So that's what happened in this situation. We began to look at, examine the data, and we were drawn to the location. And it, of course, we began to excavate. And I think it's fair to say people have been stunned. No one thought there was anything there at all. And so as soon as we, in 2017, we found a Roman bath, which is, no one expected it, but it's part of the description.
This is so, we're going to go to break. This is so exciting. You have discovered biblical Bethsaida. It's open and shut. We'll be back with more details. Dr. Steve Notley is my guest. Don't go away.
Was the place we'd meet, second seat, go Dutch treat, you were sweet.
There's a must-see new movie on SalemNow.com called Michelle Obama 2024, her real-life story and plan for power. Film director Joel Gilbert takes a deep dive into the life of Michelle Obama from Chicago to Princeton, to Martha's Vineyard. He says Michelle Obama will run for president in 2024 and base her candidacy on a life story that is more racially divisive and nearly as fictitious as that of her husband, Barack. Check out the stunning new movie on Salem Now, Michelle Obama 2024. Michelle is following the same formula as Barack to become president, a best-selling autobiography, the keynote convention speaker, and a voter registration organization. First Barack and now Michelle Obama want to transform America. Michelle Obama 2024, now playing at SalemNow.com. This new movie has stunning, game-changing revelations about Michelle Obama's past. The film director says only the truth can stop her. Michelle Obama 2024, watch the movie on demand or buy the DVD at SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com, Michelle Obama 2024, check it out. Portions of the Eric Metaxas Show are brought to you in part by Michelle Obama 2024 and Salem Now. In case you haven't been paying attention, the Biden administration has caused a financial crisis and they have no clue how to fix it. Oil prices have skyrocketed, and when oil prices go up, the cost of transportation and shipping spikes, leading the prices of goods to rise. And when we're already seeing record inflation, that's the last thing we need. Our economy is in trouble, and you need to take steps to protect yourself. If all your money is tied up in stocks, bonds, and traditional markets, you are vulnerable. Gold is one of the best ways to protect your retirement. No matter what happens, you own your gold. It is real. It is physical. It's always been valuable since the dawn of time. Legacy Precious Metals is the company I trust for investing in gold. They can help you roll your retirement account into a gold-backed IRA where you still own the physical gold. They can also ship gold and precious metals safely and securely to your house. Call Legacy at 866-528-1903 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com.
Hey, get rhythm. When you get the blues, come on, get rhythm. When you get the blues, get a rock.
Ladies and gentlemen, in case you're just tuning in, I'm excited. This is very exciting stuff. This is a big deal. My guest is Dr. Steve Notley, who has discovered biblical Bethsaida. And again, we always have to frame this so people can understand how amazing this is. We did not know where one of the major cities mentioned in the New Testament, in the Gospels, where Jesus is there all the time, and Peter and Andrew, it's a fishing village. Right? We didn't know where it was. We know now where all these other places are, but only recently have you, sir, determined that this place, which we didn't look at until recently, this place is where it all happened. When did you know that you had it right?
Second season, 2017, we excavated, we were digging down through the layers, through Crusader, Byzantine, and went down to the Roman layers, which is New Testament period, and we found a Roman bathhouse, which was, people were shocked. But it actually fits the description. Josephus talks about Bethsaida being made into a Roman polis by Herod Philip, who was the son of Herod the Great.
Who was evil.
Yes. And his son, again, Philip, took this little village and transformed it and made it into a small city, a polis. And this is the first evidence of urbanization in the region.
But this is after the Apostles' era.
Yes. Probably 30, around 30, something like that.
30 what?
30, 31, something along that line.
A.D.
A.D., sorry.
Yeah. Oh, so it's at the time. It's
right at the time of sort of transitioning time that Jesus is okay. there. Jesus is there right as that transformation is starting to okay. take place.
So it's a fishing village.
Right.
So what are some of the things that you discovered there that you realize we've hit pay dirt? What are the things that you found?
We found, first of all, we found lots of fishing weights. So lead fishing weights for the nets. So we know that it's a strong fishing industry. Also stone.
First century fishing
yes.
weights.
Stone implements, stone cups, plates, things like that, that are part of Jewish culture. So when you find stone vessels like that,
right.
it's part of the whole kosher laws. And it's a marker, it's a very clear marker that you're in a Jewish place of Jewish settlement, which again fits the description of Bethsaida. And we also coins. You usually date this by pottery, if pottery is datable,
yeah.
as well as coins. We found first century coins, coin dating from 66. So we have evidence of settlement there in the first century, and it fits all of our description of the historical sources of what we should be looking for. It matches it exactly.
Did you find any red and white plastic bobbers?
Not yet.
No. Because if you do, I just want to tell you, that's probably not first century. That's much more recent. But tell us about the Church of the Apostles. I was reading about that.
Yeah, that's been one of the pleasant surprises. Again, our interest is trying to find New Testament Roman period Bethsaida. The site was abandoned for about 200 years. Apparently, it was flooded, and it has a silt level of about silting over it. And then on top, it is resettled in the Byzantine period. That's the Christian period towards the end of the 5th century. And they built a church with a monastery. Now, we've read about it in various pilgrimage descriptions, pilgrims who came by there. Most scholars thought that these pilgrims were mistaken. And instead,
okay.
yes, we're back at that again.
And see, actually, but no, this is what's so interesting. And yet, forgive me, but just because I'm learning about this now in my own life, it's so fascinating that you realize that one of the ways that you do history and archaeology is by tracing things back. And when they discovered, Peter's home in Capernaum, or they discovered things in Nazareth, usually these things are forgotten. And also they are marked by subsequent eras. I mean, you know, somebody builds a church over a site, and then that gets covered over and whatever. So when you find a Byzantine-era church, or you find a Crusader-era church or whatever from all these years later, that is usually a marker that we found the place that was found and marked and then forgotten. We found it
exactly.
again.
Exactly.
But so you're telling me that there were people that they really thought that this Byzantine church, that the Byzantine folks got it wrong.
Well, that what they did is they claimed that these pilgrims who talked about a church, a basilica, built over the house of Peter and Andrew in Bethsaida, they said, oh, they were mistaken. That's actually the eight-sided octagonal small church in Capernaum.
Aha.
And they kept saying, no, they were all mistaken. But we kept finding evidence clearly that there was a church there. We found little pieces from tessera, making a mosaics, except this is out of glass and gilded in gold, which belong to wall mosaics that only appear in ornate churches. So even before we found the foundations, the walls, the mosaics, we began to find evidence that there was a church there. And we just had to remain patient. And as we excavated down, we came upon the walls of this basilica. It's a large basilica, and it's full of mosaics. Again, the mosaics were being uncovered this summer. But this is the church that the pilgrims all identify as being the church built over the house of Peter and Andrew.
See, this is what's so fascinating to me, is how it makes sense when you look into it. You think, if there were people alive who knew, oh, that is where Peter lived, who would not say that's a sacred site, let us mark it, let us build a church over it, let us
right.
do something, right?
Right.
And I'm fascinated by how that's one of the ways that we can trace things back. When you discover, you say, hey, here's a church from the 8th century. But why would somebody build a church in the 8th century in this spot? Well, probably because there was a history of knowing that that spot was where, you know, something happened in the 1st century and stuff. So this is exciting. Now, have you published much about this? Is there a book coming out?
We are we've just finished 5 seasons, and we're in February. We're going to sit the team, and we'll write up the 5-year report. We've done various articles, peer review articles, but nothing in terms of a volume.
Right.
But we'll produce a 5-year report on our excavation, and then seek another 5 years trying to uncover. We've done an electromagnetic scan in the surrounding area to see what's like, seeing what's under the ground.
Right.
And there are houses, structures everywhere, waiting to be excavated.
So you're saying first century Roman era stuff.
There's no Byzantine, no Crusader. It is immediately Roman period, New Testament period, houses, streets, everything is there waiting to be excavated.
Bethsaida.
Yep.
And you're saying this is the last of the cities, the New Testament cities that, you know, the last 200 years we've been discovering them. This one was unaccounted for until you. Can we say that?
I wouldn't say me as in...
It wasn't just you, but your
team.
You're centrally involved in it.
I should mention I worked together with Professor Moti Aviam, Kinneret College. He's the director of the excavation. Mm. So I worked together with him, and we collaborate together in our work.
What do you think it does for people? Because, you know, most Americans, myself included, we've never been to these places. They're mythical to us. It must be extraordinary to say, no, there it is. These are the stones. This is where it happened. I mean, it kind of changes our relationship to the scripture.
Sure. Look, I lived there 16 years. I went over to do my PhD at Hebrew University because I thought it would make a difference to immerse myself in the culture, the language, and the land in which all this took place. And it does make a difference. It's not just myths. It's not just stories, but there's a tangible element to it in terms of the stage, the geography, the archaeology that reinforces the sense of the story of the Gospels and Scripture as a whole.
I have to ask you your background. I should have done it in the beginning, but how did you get to where you are today? Where did you grow up, and what made you decide you want to go into this field?
I grew up, as I mentioned earlier, my joke. I
in
grew
Oklahoma,
up in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Grew up in Oklahoma. I did my undergraduate and graduate in Tulsa at Oral Roberts University, and then I became intrigued by the work of a man named David Flusser, who was the preeminent Jewish historian and sort of first century in Christianity and Judaism. And so I packed up our things, my wife, 2 children, 1983, and moved over. And again, spent 16 years there studying at Hebrew University, and then teaching subsequent to that in Jerusalem.
We've got to go to a break. Folks, I know you're not going anyplace. We're talking about some exciting things. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Don't go away. Tell me, Eric, why is Relief Factor so successful at lowering or eliminating pain? I'm often asked that question. The owners of Relief Factor tell me they believe our bodies were designed to heal. That's right, designed to heal, and I agree with them. So the doctors who formulated Relief Factor for them selected the 4 best ingredients, yes, 100% drug-free ingredients. Each helps your body deal with inflammation. Each of the 4 ingredients deals with inflammation from a different metabolic pathway. And that right there, approaching from 4 different angles, may be why so many people find such wonderful relief. So if you've got back pain, shoulder, neck, hip, knee, or foot pain from exercise or just getting older, you should order the 3-week quick start discounted to only $19.95 to see if it will work for you. It works for me. It has for about 70% of the 500,000 people who've tried it and have ordered more. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF to find out about this offer. Feel the difference. We're talking about biblical archaeology, which I get very excited about. I get excited about archaeology in general, but more recently biblical archaeology, just because I dove into it for my most recent book, Is Atheism Dead? It's so fascinating that we are discovering things that have been hidden for literally 2,000 years. We've wondered whether we might ever discover these things. So it's not a question of where is it. The question is, could we ever find it? And you and your team have found Bethsaida. So anybody who's reading the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you bump into this place. Now we know where it is.
And we're excavating it and trying to uncover as much as we can of the site of not only the village, but the what became a small city there on the northeast shore of the Sea of Galilee.
See, that's another thing, too, is that all this stuff is so fluid. I mean, when we think of it, you know, frozen in amber circa 30 AD, you realize, no, according to what you were saying earlier, Herod, the son of
Herod Philip,
Herod Philippi, whatever his name is, he decided to make this place into something grander. And so you said they've just their Roman baths there. They wouldn't have been there in Jesus' day.
No. And they're part of, again, they're part of, if I can say, the urbanization of the village. It was a small Jewish fishing village that Herod Philip decided. It's at the southern end of his kingdom. If you think of Caesarea Philippi, which you sort of alluded to, that's at the northern end.
Yeah.
This is at the southern tip of his kingdom, his territory on the shore of the Sea of Galilee. And so he transforms it into a small polis, a small city.
Do you think he had as his ambition to wipe out the Christian history? It doesn't sound like it, but because there were cases when obviously these Roman leaders, they just wanted to wipe out what was there, and they'd build a temple of Artemis or a temple of Jupiter.
He's Jewish.
He's Jewish, but, you know,
yeah,
I'm
he
just
would have. But no, we don't have any indication of persecution there, at least in the first century that we know of, and in the area of Caesarea Philippi or in Bethsaida.
And then you're saying that there was a major flood. Did the Sea of Galilee, in fact, rise to the point where you said this was silted over for some decades? Or?
According to the geologists, the silt is from the Jordan. The Jordan flooded.
Uh-huh.
The course of the Jordan changes occasionally. It's changed in recent times. And it flooded the site, and it was covered, let's say, by 2 feet of silt. And so it was abandoned for about 200 years. But the Christians had a memory of where it was and came back and resettled, built a church, a monastery there on the site. And people can question it and say, well, you know, in the Byzantine period, they built churches wherever they wanted to build them. But the interesting thing about this is that under the church are Roman first century houses, which says they didn't just build it anywhere. They knew exactly what they were doing.
I tell you, there's so much crazy stuff going on. It's just hard for us to process. I mean, first of all, it's very complicated because you're talking about centuries where great changes occur. Cities are built on top of cities are built on top of cities. There's flooding. It's just fascinating to me that we can go back. Mm-hmm. But we've only been going back for 150 or so years. So a lot of these places are, but this, you say, is the last of the major New Testament cities that have been identified, to be identified.
Yes, it's the last one that I think today it's the leading candidate, people would say fairly conclusively because of what we've found in the last five seasons that this verifies that this is Bethsaida. So it's the last, what I call the last lost city of the Gospels.
Now, you say that in 1968 in Capernaum, where they discovered what is claimed to be the home of Peter, and there were churches obviously built over that, you take issue with that. You believe that that is misidentified.
I do. It is definitely a Byzantine church.
Yeah.
We have evidence. A church father named Epiphanius talks about churches that are built during the time of Constantine, one in Tiberias, Magdala, and Capernaum, as well as Sepphoris,
mm-hmm.
And he allowed them to build churches, but there's no apostolic connection to them, no apostolic traditions to them. And what I can say without any question, for the first at least for the first 1,000 years of Christian tradition, Peter never comes from Capernaum. Peter always, always, always comes from Bethsaida.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, I think you, John 1:44 speaks of, you know, Peter, Andrew, and Philip coming from Bethsaida. And that is the consistent Christian tradition for at least 1,000 years.
Since I haven't been there, how far is Bethsaida from Capernaum, roughly?
If you were walking, but of course you have to cross the Jordan, it's about 5 miles, 4 or 5 miles. But it's, again, we're on the Transjordan. We're on the other side, as the Gospels speak.
Right.
And they would generally come by boat.
And how far are these places from Nazareth?
I'd say from Capernaum to Nazareth, I'm probably the only person you'll ever interview who's walked from Nazareth to Capernaum. I took my students one time, and we began early in the morning. It's almost 30 miles.
Wow.
A walk. It's a long day.
But it's just fascinating that we can go to these places that we've read about, and it does come alive, and that's why this is so exciting. Now, there is a website. I want to give this. We'll be right back. But before I go, folks, if you want to know more about this specific excavation, go to elarajexcavations.com. That's ELARAJ. Excavations.com. We'll be right back.
Hanging around, nothing to do but frown. Rainy days and Mondays always get me down.
Hey there, folks. Eric Metaxas here. As you know, our friend, and he's a real friend, Mike Lindell, has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of their life. But he didn't stop by simply creating the best pillow. Now, Mike has done it again by introducing his My Slippers. My Slippers, they're unbelievable. I know all about them, but I got to tell you, for a limited time, you will save $90 on each pair of My Slippers. They're expensive. You can save $90. This blowout sale of the year won't last. Order now. He's taken over 2 years to develop them. The My Slippers are designed to wear indoors and out all day long, made with My Pillow Foam and Impact Gel to help prevent fatigue, made with quality leather suede. Call 1-800-978-3057. Use the promo code ERIC or go to MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listeners square and use promo code ERIC. The offer will not last long, so order now with promo code ERIC at MyPillow.com or call 800-978-3057. 800-978-3057.
Hey, Mrs. Robinson, Jesus loves you more.
Hey, folks, we're talking about biblical archaeology with a biblical archaeologist. Do you describe yourself as an archaeologist? I mean, you do archaeology, but or do you say, no, I'm an historian or, you know?
No, I actually am very careful. I say I'm trained as an historian and I'm an historical geographer. I deal in history and geography, which involves archaeology.
The reason I love this is because most people couldn't care less, but in the academic world, they get all prickly about definitions and
no, but it goes back to what we were saying earlier, that people get in their lane.
That's what I'm saying.
And historical geography is a multidisciplinary approach, and that's what unlocked this question.
Yeah.
Is the different disciplines looking at the question.
Look, it happens over and over again. I'm involved in a dig, this is Homeric, the tomb of Odysseus. Mm. In the Ionian Islands. I've been involved in this for years. And it is the multidisciplinary approach that solves the problem, that sees what people in their lanes often don't see or can't see or won't see. And I'm always fascinated by how people are, they are very prickly about, well, you're not officially an archaeologist. You don't have a PhD in archaeology. And most people think, like, who cares? The question is it right or is it wrong? But there are people that get very prideful about their degrees and their, and I think part of it is that when you're a generalist, which is maybe the term I use for myself, it does rub these people the wrong way. They think, well, I spent 30 years in this, and who are you to kind of waltz in and, you know, and I guess the answer is I don't know who I am. I just want to know if it's true or not or if I'm right or wrong. And, you know, I think that's the approach we should all have. But it is funny. Now, what – right now, this dig is going on. The website, again, it's El Araj Excavations, E-L-A-R-A-J, E-L-A-R-A-J excavations.com. So this is ongoing. What are you hoping to find, or what are you thinking you might find in this place that you now believe, that we believe is Bethsaida from the New Testament?
We're next year, next summer, we have a summer excavation for volunteers, and that will focus on the church, finished uncovering the mosaics inside of the church and trying to understand a little bit more of the history
of the
church.
This is the 8th century church.
Yes.
The Byzantine church built on the site of Bethsaida.
I would argue that it's a couple hundred years older than that.
Really?
Yes.
You will argue this in an article, I hope, right?
The 8th century is the first clear, explicit reference to it, but right. It existed prior. And then in the autumn, we're going to start doing two sessions. In the autumn, we'll do an excavation, and we're going to start uncovering as much of first century Bethsaida as we can. As I mentioned, there are houses, structures. Every time we dig right under the surface, we come into walls of houses, first century Roman period. So there's a large area just waiting to be uncovered. And we hope in that excavation that we'll be able to illuminate and understand a little bit more about the history of this site.
Now, part of what fascinates me about this is that you realize that the logistics in the world, in the broken, sick world in which we live, just because something is there doesn't mean the authorities are going to say, well, go ahead and dig. So it seems like you all have had favor because, you know, just because you know that there are first century structures there. I can imagine there are many places we've had this trouble in Greece, and you have this trouble in other parts of the Middle East where it's just hard to get them to let you dig.
Look, there are certain hoops you have to jump through. The archaeologists have to have particular credentials, and we have to get permission from the Israel Antiquities Authority. They've been very good to work with, and I think in the beginning, they sort of let us dig because no one thought there was anything there. Now, as things have been expanding and all the publicity, especially with the Church of the Apostles, we call it, it has taken on a life of its own. I think, you know, the Israel Antiquities Authority will be, I hope, they'll be very eager to see us continue for another 5 years.
Well, I get the impression that the Israel Antiquities Authority are... they're good guys, basically,
yeah.
I'm thrilled to hear it. So, when you uncover what looks like a first century fishing village, Bethsaida, you haven't yet dug much of it. What does this do for the future? I mean, it's exciting to me to think that the place where Jesus walked and did these kinds of things, that we may be able to walk there ourselves.
Right. I think it'll be a tremendous opportunity. Again, we don't know what we're exactly going to find. That's a question. We have an ongoing conversation. What should we expect? When we speak of a polis, a city, are we talking about a theater? Are we talking about, is Herod's palace there? Herod the Philip's palace there? We're finding frescoes. We're finding painted walls, frescoed walls. So we're finding evidence of things that are attracting our attention in terms of uncovering more of it and trying to see how much the city, the village, actually transformed and became a small city. Will we find a theater? That's been another conversation. There are a lot of things I think that we can seek out to uncover, to try to understand the breadth of the city and its development. And of course, as a Christian, it's important for me to understand something of that setting for the Gospels, of Jesus' presence there with his apostles.
And what about a synagogue? Is there a synagogue there?
If I was a betting person, which I'm not, I would say yes. I would. We have on either side of us, we have Capernaum, and we have a place called Kursi, which was ancient Gergesa, where the casting out of the demoniac, demons from the demoniac. In both of those places on the lake, there are churches and synagogues to be seen. That's an unusual combination to find those together.
Yeah.
We have a church. We have we found a basalt lioness, which about half a ton. Lioness, and that is oftentimes a decorative element in a synagogue. So it wouldn't be outrageous for us to suggest that there's possibly a synagogue there. I mean, we don't have one. We haven't. Yeah. But
so wouldn't they have had to have one in a town like this?
I would expect there to be one. I mean, if Jesus is there, the apostles are there.
Yeah.
That's usually a place of gathering. It's a synagogue.
As I always say, whatever. It's just exciting. It's thrilling. So good to have you, Dr. Steve Notley, Distinguished Professor of New Testament and Christian Origins at NIAC, right across our river here, elarajexcavations.com, E-L-A-R-A-J, elarajexcavations.com. Thank you so much. Very exciting.
Thank you.
I know that you got your reasons, these things that are pleasing you.
Okay, it's your last chance to sign up, folks. We're not kidding. August 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 8th, we are taping The Talk Show.
The Talk Show.
A late night talk show starring Eric Metaxas. Mm-hmm. I will be playing the role of Eric Metaxas, which you would expect. I've been training for it most of my life. We're going to have some big name guests. I can't announce them for some reason, but I'm just telling you, it's very exciting. And if you want to be part of the studio audience in New York, August 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 8th, we would love you to be there. But it's first come, first serve. Once it's filled up, that's that.
Yeah.
So if you know anybody in the New York area who wants to come, if you want to fly in or come in for a few days, or I don't know, we would love to have you. I will mingle with the crowd. We'll have a chance to meet and greet and hang out. And I know we do have friends flying in from all kinds of places, like Colorado Springs, and I can't mention their names, but we've got some friends coming in.
Yeah.
And it's exciting. Yeah. And who knows who the guests will be. I know some of them, but I can't really, I can't say it yet. Maybe I will be able to eventually. But August 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 8th, we want you, our friends, to be in the audience. We want to hang out. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, fun times.
And I want to just remind you that if you're not signed up for ericmetaxas.com, you don't know how to do this. So I'm just letting you know that you have to sign up for ericmetaxas.com. Otherwise, you're not going to get the email, and then it's not even possible. But this is,
There's a link to the newsletter. You sign up right there, and you get it. And
ericmetaxas.com. But I promise you, this is going to be a lot of fun for a lot of people, and we want you to be some of those people. So please look into that soon. Speaking of good times, how about that Mike Lindell?
Oh, yeah.
He has done it again. He's created a coffee. I don't believe he could claim to have invented coffee. I believe that was I'm pretty sure that was Leonardo da Vinci who invented coffee. But Mike Lindell has created his own brand of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
It's called My Coffee.
Yeah.
Not your coffee. My.
Yeah.
Hey, let me at least finish my coffee. My Coffee is available at mystore.com. There's all kinds of new stuff available at mystore.com. But listen, if you're going to drink coffee, and I drink a lot of coffee, you might as well get it from people who are kind of on our team. Okay, Mike Lindell, got to support the team. And quoting David Putty from Seinfeld, got to support the team. And if you want to support the team, go to mystore.com. Get My Coffee. You can get anything there. You can get most of my books are available there, the Bonhoeffer posters. But you have to use the code ERIC because you got to support the team. And mystore.com has new products, but we're specifically letting you know that most people drink coffee. And if Mike Lindell raves about it, I'll bet you it's great coffee. But I haven't ordered it yet because we just found out about it, we're going to get My Coffee. And remember, it's My Coffee. When you get it, it's your coffee, but then you say My Coffee. So go to mystore.com, check it out. We should also tell you this month only, Nutramedics 30% off if you use the code ERIC. Only this month, folks, 30% off. Take advantage. It's not going to be that in August. I promise you, this is like, it's a big deal. 30% is a big deal. So use code ERIC. And then we want to remind you to go to
SalemNow.com.
Yeah, go to SalemNow.com. There's a whole bunch of stuff there. There's the movie on Michelle Obama 2024. We need to know what she's up to. 2,000 Mules, obviously, if you haven't seen that, I'm pretty sure you're a communist. Jonathan Cahn has a Harbinger film, so that's salemnow.com. And finally, let me say, for those of you who've offered up prayers for my dad, I want to say thank you. He's back home. He's doing well. I will see him this weekend. Anytime I'm around, obviously, I go up there. But I just appreciate it. He's 95, and, you know, when you're 95, things get tough. And so, but what a blessing that I have him at 95. So I want to say thank you to all of you from the bottom of my heart, and we'll see you later.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.